Hey, everybody. Host Nora McInerney is back for season two of The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, a podcast from Ruby Studio and AbbVie. In each episode, Nora has a real conversation with real people living with chronic migraine to see how they took action to understand this disease. So jump into the conversation for season two, a show that creates a little more space for empathy and understanding in such a complicated world. There shouldn't be so much hesitation around asking questions and asking for help. So don't wait. Join The Head Start, Embracing the Journey, and learn a little bit more about life with chronic migraine. Hey, everybody. If you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
Brought to you by the all-new 2014 Toyota Corolla.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and this is Stuff You Should Know because Jerry's over there too.
How you doing, buddy? Besides sick.
I'm not sick. I've got a little bit of a bug, but
you
that's
never
it.
Admit when you're sick. I love
well,
it.
Well, no,
because you think that's the first step in.
Yeah.
And being sick is saying I'm sick.
I definitely believe in psychosomatic effects.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the mind has an impact on the body.
If you can be a hypochondriac, surely you can do the opposite, right? Yeah.
Yeah. You can will yourself into not being sick.
Anyway, people, the show must go on, and I just want to point out how dedicated my partner here is to his craft.
Right. Well, I also want to say, I want to promise that it's not going to be like the great six-week illness of...
No, you don't get sick. That was back in the old days.
Yeah.
The unhealthy days.
When I smoked and everything.
Yeah, your body didn't know how to heal.
Right.
So it was enjoying nicotine.
Now I'm just like, I'm not getting sick. I said it to myself last night, and here I am. Better than ever.
Josh 2.0.
Thank you.
All right. Let's do this.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
I got a story for you.
I bet I know it.
I'll bet you do too.
Eddie Knowles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you saw his name is Everett Knowles Jr., but everybody called him Eddie. Two D's and a Y. I find that unwholesome.
Yeah, and I didn't know Eddie could be short for Everett. Never heard that.
I don't think it is. I think he just didn't like his name.
Oh, okay. Because it seems like you should call him Every.
Yeah, or Evie.
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 Yeah.
Ev.
Ev.
The big E. Something.
The big E.
So.
He was a little E, though. He was a little guy.
Tiny E.
Mm-hmm.
Like a little Elvis.
That's right.
Well, Eddie, we'll call him Eddie because that's what he preferred to be called.
Sure.
He was walking home from school one day in Somerville, Massachusetts, which is a suburb of Boston. And he was walking along the railroad tracks, and there just happened to be a train loaded with gravel hauling out of the area very slowly while he was walking alongside. And he said, you know what? I'm just going to have a little thrill right now and grab onto this train. And he did. He successfully grabbed onto the train, was hanging with, I believe, his right arm.
Yeah.
And was having the time of his life just dangling there when he misjudged the distance between the train, side of the train, and the side of a tunnel.
Yeah.
And he was pulled into the tunnel support, smacked it, and hung on for a second before he was dropped off of the train. The train kept going through the tunnel, leaving Eddie kind of crumpled and in a little shivering mass.
At the
mouth of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So he stands up and he grabs his arm. He's like, oh, my arm doesn't feel very good. And he starts walking toward town. And apparently he walked about 100 yards uphill when some workers saw him and said, grab that kid. Because he was covered in blood. He was staggering. He looked like he was out of it. He was clearly in shock. So they grabbed it, ran and got a woman, because at the time, this was 1962, a woman was the only one who could provide any kind of initial emergency care.
Yeah.
And a clerk at, I believe, some sort of warehouse came out and started to apply pressure to this boy's wounds. But she had a little bit of trouble when she tried to close the wound with a tourniquet. She found that his arm wasn't attached to his body any longer.
Yeah, he was just kind of holding it there.
Very luckily, he was wearing a jacket, or else his arm would have been back at the mouth of the tunnel.
Yeah, man, can you imagine, like, The guy's holding his arm basically to keep it from falling out of his jacket. Although he didn't know that, you know.
No, he didn't. He was in shock. Yeah. Luckily, he was still lucid enough to like tell everybody who he was, where he lived. And they called the hospital, and the hospital scrambled some surgeons. But it wasn't until Chuck, he got to the hospital and they started cutting his jacket off that they realized the extent of the damage. This kid's arm was torn clean off.
Yeah.
But the operative word is clean.
Yeah. That's right.
Because Eddie Everett Knowles Jr. of Somerville, Mass., mm-hmm. on May 23rd, 1962, became the first recipient of a full successful limb reattachment surgery.
First human recipient.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
They had done that before in dogs successfully, mm-hmm. and they had done all the different surgeries that are required to reattach a limb, but they had never done all of them at once. Mm-hmm. Like they'd reattach nerves, they'd reattach bone.
Right.
They'd reattach blood vessels, but they had never had a full amputation in a human being successfully reattached. And from what I read, the doctor was, I don't know about excited, but they had been looking for a case.
I also,
because they thought, like, I think we can do this. We just need the right case.
Right, exactly.
You know, and he like, called his buddy, and he's like, I think we got one. Get
like,
in here.
They got they like you said, they'd successfully reattached arteries, nerves, bone, that kind of thing, but never the whole shebang. So they said, well, we know how to do this.
Yeah.
If somebody will just come along and present us with an arm pulled cleanly off.
Yeah.
Especially a 12-year-old, because that definitely worked to his advantage. Apparently, an artery, when severed.
Yeah.
Will plug itself up, especially uh-huh. in younger kids. That plugging is way more successful and happens more quickly. So this kid just basically presented like the perfect case. The main artery, I guess, is brachial artery leading out of his shoulder was a full like 2 inches out of the
Jeez.
Wound. So like they had a lot to work with and
yeah.
work they did.
And they, the arm was on ice and they began working immediately. This is Mass General, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And, they started with the arteries and veins, and then the nurse felt, well, they all sort of saw color, and they described yeah. it as a glow kind of came back into the arm.
This kid hopped the train, had his arm pulled off, and within 2.5 hours, they had gotten circulation back.
Yeah, and the nurse grabbed the hand and said, hey, it's warm. That's good. It's pink and warm.
She shook it, made it do the metal sign. Everybody in the operating theater was laughing.
The bone and the muscle and the nerve, and the skin, happened in later surgeries. And the, I think the nerve, they made a pretty important decision at the time was to wait on that altogether.
Right.
And let it heal some more first, which is, as it turns out, most of this was sort of how they do it today.
Yeah.
Like they perfected the process from that point through the 70s and in the 80s is when they really started like humming with, limb reattachment.
The only difference that I saw was, and we'll get into it a little more, but they reattached the arteries first to get circulation, I guess, to keep from more and more tissue dying.
Right.
And then they reattached the bone by driving a screw in using a hammer. They nail the screw into the marrow.
I know, that's
crazy. Then reattach the arm bone. What is that? Femur? No, femur's in the leg.
Yeah, femur's in the leg.
You think I would have looked this up already?
Yeah.
The upper arm bone, then they drove that into the other end of the screw.
Yeah, that's just
normally nutty. Now though they reattach the bone first to provide stability.
Yeah.
So when you reattach the arteries and veins and stuff, they won't pull away.
Yeah, and he it was a success story because he mm-hmm. ended up he couldn't use that hand as his dominant hand any longer,
which is sad because he was a good pitcher.
Yeah, but he was able to eventually get enough use out of it. To where they said about like a left-hander would have use of his right hand.
Mm-hmm.
So he just sort of had to switch that up. But for 1962, that's pretty successful, especially considering in 1960 was the very first microsurgery performed just 2 years previously at the University of Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
Go Catamounts.
Nice.
But
that is dedication.
So microsurgery, that's really what we're talking about here. It's the use of a microscope
mm-hmm.
to perform surgery. And when you're attaching, you're essentially sewing together little nerves and blood vessels. Like
yeah.
a millimeter in diameter. Yeah, so you need a microscope and a tiny, tiny little needle.
Right, and you're using tiny, tiny little suture thread, which is about as big as a hair.
Yeah.
That's the stuff you're using to suture these blood vessels back together.
It's not cat gut.
No, and it's an extremely involved surgery, as you can imagine, but it's step by step. It's like first you do the blood vessels, then you do the arteries, and you do muscles, ligaments, tendons, all this stuff. And you're doing it in this process. But each part of the procedure is like an enormous surgery in and of itself.
Yeah.
So like a limb reattachment, which is called a replantation.
Oh, I thought it was going to be called like limery or something.
Yeah. Some people call it that.
I'm a limerist.
The saucier doctors call it limery. But it usually is like, as on a whole, the replantation surgery can last like an entire day.
Yeah, it's intensive. Mm-hmm. And I read too that the whole microsurgery, the concept of using a microscope for surgery was not accepted at first. Like doctors and surgeons were like, no, like we can't do that. We have to look with our eyes. And so it had to be perfected sort of on the fringe by surgeons who were willing to like accept this might be the future.
And experiment in their basements.
I guess so.
On hapless victims.
Maybe. Or dogs.
Yeah, I didn't get the, and I didn't look it up, but I didn't get the impression from this article, one way or the other, how dogs lost their limbs to begin with. Like, was it accidental? And they're like, oh, okay, well, this will reattach it. Or were they cutting dogs' limbs off and then reattaching them? Because I'm guessing it was probably the latter.
You know?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked plenty about that kind of topic.
Because, I mean, think about it. Why would dogs' limbs be pulled off in any more frequency than a human's limbs and hence present more cases to practice on? I think they were cutting off dogs' limbs and then reattaching, which is messed up.
Yeah, it is.
So you were talking about microsurgery. What I saw was replacing toes for thumbs got big in the 60s. That was a big one.
So you had a thumb on your foot or a big toe on your hand.
Big toe on your hand.
Wow.
Because apparently 50 to 70% of all the utility in your hand is in your thumb. And if you're missing a thumb, you might as well just not have your hand. You don't need a big toe quite as much. You can use a cane or something like that, thanks to your new toe thumb.
Yeah.
And that became perfected in the 60s.
Toe thumb, that's a good band name.
Yeah. And then in the 70s, free flap tissue transfer became a big thing. Which is basically going to a part of your body, harvesting an area of your body, like under your thigh, your abdomen, I think your back, lower back, and then just basically taking the gap and sewing it back together, right?
Yeah.
So you have a scar, but you also have a portion of your body that's diminished in size, and then taking that and using it to basically do what we understand as a skin graft, which requires microsurgery as well. It's just basically taking this part here and putting it back over here where there's a bunch of damage and reattaching all of the nerves and the blood vessels and everything.
Yeah, I saw when I was looking up photos of this kind of thing, I came across something that I'd never seen before. And I didn't get the story, but you could almost, I mean, I sort of gathered what was going on just from the photo series. But someone was degloved on on their fingers, basically, from like the hand knuckles forward, all the fingers had no skin.
Yeah.
And they, from the looks of it, they inserted it into an arm, like into a bicep, the fingers, and like they lived there for a while, like inserted under the skin of the arm. And that skin, they later would remove the fingers and it came off as like a big flat skin graft, like sticking your hand in an envelope.
Crazy.
And eventually formed like webbed fingers and then fingers.
That is crazy.
But like, I don't know.
Is that new?
I don't know, man. I just saw these photos. I should have done, I mean, it doesn't really have anything to do with this, but it was just remarkable to see someone with their fingers stuck in their bicep. under the skin.
Like, I'm having trouble visualizing this. I need to see these photos.
I'll dig them up and show it to you.
Yeah, if you want to see some really gross stuff, you can just Google microsurgery or replantation is another one.
Yeah, man. It's
some nasty stuff out there.
Yeah, but amazing, like, that they can. And I looked at so many of them, I kind of got to that point where I was like, well, this isn't gross. This is what the body looks like without skin sometimes. And
which is gross.
No, it's I wasn't grossed out.
Bodies without skin are gross.
I don't think so. I think it's the beauty inside.
You've become desensitized, my friend.
I have.
Well, before we get any further, Chuck, let's do a message break because I got some good stuff coming up.
Okay. Stuff you should
know. Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's Rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 25129288087, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's rainwater. Sip the sky. You know, true love is always being excited from the first moment you see one another. And every time after that, it's taking long walks together in the summer or gazing longingly into each other's eyes and watching their tail wag when they chase a squirrel in the yard.
Well, the Pedigree brand asked about believing in love at first sight, and honestly, the answer is yes. As everyone knows from listening to this show, we have pulled all of our dogs off the street that Emily and I have had over the years, either right off the street or through a local shelter and working with them, and they've all become valued family members, and we think they've appreciated it too.
Yeah, Chuck, there is a Pedigree loyalty survey that found that 90% of first-time dog owners report having a dog improved at least one of their relationships, and 80% of first-time dog owners are overwhelmingly more likely to have made at least one new connection as a result of getting a dog. And 95% of all dog owners say that the bond they have with their dogs is closer than they ever expected. Not a big surprise.
That's true. We all know that adopting a dog can lead to a lifetime meaningful connection, and real love can exist between a pet and a pet parent.
You got that straight.
Pedigree is committed to helping more dogs find loving homes. Opening your home to a dog can help open your heart. And love at first sight is closer than you think because it's available at your local dog shelter.
Yeah, very important point. You can find love at first sight with the Pedigree Adoption Drive from June 7th to June 9th. And the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
That's right. So just visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
So, Chuck, we understand microsurgery now. It's Frankensteinian, right?
Yeah, you're basically just sewing stuff together.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, let's say you have a dead person who has a great hand and you have a live person who's got a poor hand. You cut off the live person's hand, cut off the dead person's hand, and attach the live or the dead person's hand to the live person. That's Frankensteinian. That's what they're doing, and it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
But if this ever happens to you, if say, you have a poor hand in that it's no longer attached to your wrist.
Yeah, that hand sucks.
Right. And it's all crushed and damaged or whatever. No. Let's say it's intact.
Okay.
And you say, you know what? I think through my shock that I might be a good candidate for replantation of my hand.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, you want to call 911 immediately because that's just the first thing you do. You go ahead and get folks on the way.
Or you can ask someone with you to call 911 that's not putting anyone out.
Yeah, that's true. If you can't dial, maybe you don't have hands.
Right.
You could tell Siri to call 911.
Yeah. That's her job.
Yeah, I actually changed my Siri to a dude, so it's not her anymore.
Oh, yeah.
To an Englishman, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Reginald?
I don't know what his name is, actually. But he'll say stuff like, you know, I'll say, call Josh, and he'll say, ringing Josh.
Oh, yeah?
Instead of calling, yeah.
That's classy.
Kind of fun. Anyway, you want to dial 911, get them on the way, and then immediately you want to just try and stabilize the patient. You want to stop the bleeding.
Right.
Either with heavy pressure or a tourniquet above the wound.
Like a 1960s female.
Yeah, exactly. And once you get the patient stabilized and they're not going to bleed out there in the kitchen or wherever it is, you want to get the digit or the hand or mm-hmm. the limb and put it on ice, but not directly on ice.
Right.
Put it in a bag and then put that bag on ice.
Yeah. You want to pack it in ice.
As much ice as you can find.
But you want to make sure that in the bag that you put the hand or the digit or whatever in, there's no ice and there's no water, because water causes it to shrivel.
Yeah.
And that means you won't be able to reattach it.
Yeah. And ice, you can actually, if I cut off my finger and I threw it in a bucket of ice, it could actually get frostbite.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That is crazy.
But it's also pretty cool.
Yeah. And you don't want frostbite on your, because, you know, you won't be able to use it anymore.
No, frostbite is just dead tissue brought about by exposure to extreme cold.
That's right. So after.
That's a t-shirt right there.
It is. After you've got it on the ice, in the bag on the ice, you've called 911, you've got the bleeding stopped, you want to cross whatever fingers you have remaining and hope that you've got a good hospital nearby with some surgeons that aren't doing much at the moment.
Right. Or who are willing to cancel their schedules and say, let's go do this.
Yeah, get off the golf course.
So when you get to the hospital, there's some things you can expect. If all of your surgeons have come in from the golf course, they should be ready and waiting for you. And like we said, first they're going to reattach the bone to provide stability for the rest of the surgery. And there's probably still going to be a little bit of a gap there because they need to get in there. And then they start reattaching your blood vessels.
That's right. And just like with Eddie Knowles, that just gets, you know, the blood flow going and essentially makes that limb alive once mm-hmm. more.
Right. Well, it also keeps it from further dying.
Yeah.
Because, Chuck, it turns out that, like, there is a finite amount of time, which is understandable.
Sure.
But we are aware of how much time a limb can just sit around in the hot sun starting to go, you know,
so gross.
Fetid.
Yeah.
And there's, so for example, if you have a whole arm or a whole leg cut off, like, remember Death Proof?
Yeah.
That girl has her leg, like, sticking out of the window.
Oh, yeah.
And Mad Mike, is that his name?
Kurt Russell? I don't remember.
When he hits him and her leg just goes.
Yeah.
If she had survived and her leg just laid there out at room temperature, it could have been good for 6 to 12 hours. I imagine you're really pushing it at 12 hours.
Yeah.
But if, say, you have somebody who's like, this leg needs to be put on ice and does everything right, it could stay refrigerated for 4 days and still be reattached.
Yeah. They point out, though, in this article, ideally you're having that surgery that day.
Yeah.
But if you...
Within hours.
Yeah. Within minutes, if you're talking ideally.
Basically, the sooner the better. As soon as they're ready to go, you should be ready to go as well.
Yeah, but you are right. If that is not the case and you have some good refrigeration going on, you can last for about 4 days.
Yeah, and apparently it's not even necessarily the skin tissue that... that leads to problems and reattachment after being exposed to room temperature. It's muscle degradation.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So you get there, you're getting your surgery done. You probably are going to expect to go through that first long surgery, bone mm-hmm. reattachment, blood vessel, maybe some muscle fiber.
And then tendon action, maybe?
Sure. And then they'll say, we'll put the nerves off for later. And then later on down the road will be a skin graft of some kind, like a free flap surgery, like I was talking about. And the free refers to the free, like this part of this tissue from your body has been removed, the donor site.
Oh, it's not the cost of the surgery?
But no.
Okay.
It's been cut free.
Right.
And there you have it.
That makes sense. And then it really is simpler than you think. It's reattaching, and hopefully everything takes, and you fight the infection off, and you start the rehab process, which takes a long time, and it's grueling and not fun. It can be weird at first. They point out in the article, it can be weird to look down and see your arm reattached, but I imagine no weirder than looking down and seeing your arm not attached.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It'd probably be a comfort to see it reattach.
Yeah.
But,
you're a jerk if you're like, oh, it's kind of crooked.
Yeah. But, apparently sometimes it can, feel a little different and, that can be a little strange and off-putting.
Sure.
Like it's not like, oh, I'm just like I was before.
Right.
You know?
Better than ever.
Right.
And Tom wrote this one, my good friend Tom Sheaf. He said he also talked about something called cross transfer.
This was mind blowing.
Which is basically like if just replantation is Frankensteinian, this is even more so.
Yeah, I didn't quite get the purpose of the hand. Basically, you're getting a left hand on your right arm, let's say.
Yeah.
So your thumb and your pinky would be in weird places.
Right, your palm's still facing the right direction, but
that'd be really weird.
Thumb is switched, yeah.
Yeah, but what's the point of that if you have a bad hand and a good hand?
I don't know if they only had like a left hand available at the time. I don't know that one.
Okay.
I got the other one where basically they take your lower leg beneath your knee.
So like if your upper leg is damaged and your lower leg is fine.
Let's just say your upper leg is wasted for whatever reason, but your lower leg is fine. They'll cut it off. The lower leg, and basically turn it around, right?
Uh-huh.
And then your knee becomes locked. Your calf muscles then serve the function that your thigh muscles used to.
Right.
And your knee joint is now in your ankle. Then you also are going to be wearing a prosthetic, obviously, because you have no thigh muscles. And your turned around foot, which is now backwards, is extra support for that prosthetic foot or leg or limb.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. It's basically saying, like, how can we take this and use it to even better utility now that its original purpose has been destroyed?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I tried to find photos of a cross transferred hand, but I couldn't find any photos. And weirdly, pictures of Madonna kept popping up.
Does she have something?
I don't know, dude.
Huh.
Like, I tried all sorts of Google searches, and images of her kept popping up. So, I don't know. Maybe she's got 2 left feet or something.
She does not.
What was that in Waiting for Guffman?
He
literally had 2 left feet. It was kind of a dumb joke.
Was it? I thought it was
Best in Show. Yeah. So, Josh, that's one way. We talked about microsurgery. Mm-hmm. But there is perhaps another, even better way, which we'll cover right after this message break. Stuff you should
know. Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's Rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 25129288 87, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Sip the sky. You know, true love is always being excited from the first moment you see one another, and every time after that. It's taking long walks together in the summer, or gazing longingly into each other's eyes, and watching their tail wag when they chase a squirrel in the yard.
Well, the Pedigree brand asked about believing in love at first sight, and honestly, the answer is yes. As everyone knows from listening to this show, we have pulled all of our dogs off the street that Emily and I have had over the years, either right off the street or through a local shelter and working with them, and they've all become valued family members, and we think they've appreciated it too.
Yeah, Chuck, there is a Pedigree loyalty survey that found that 90% of first-time dog owners report having a dog improved at least one of their relationships, and 80% of first-time dog owners are overwhelmingly more likely to have made at least one new connection as a result of getting a dog. And 95% of all dog owners say that the bond they have with their dogs is closer than they ever expected. Not a big surprise.
That's true. We all know that adopting a dog can lead to a lifetime meaningful connection, and real love can exist between a pet and a pet parent.
You got that straight.
Pedigree is committed to helping more dogs find loving homes. Opening your home to a dog can help open your heart. And love at first sight is closer than you think because it's available at your local dog shelter.
Yeah, very important point. You can find love at first sight with the Pedigree Adoption Drive from June 7th to June 9th. And the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
That's right. So just visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.
All right. So we've discussed how you can have surgery, but there may be an actual way to regrow things.
Yeah, like, this is by far the more preferable of the two.
Yeah, like fingers, but not like, you can't lose a whole finger and regrow it. It's got to be above the bone. Like, let's say you get the tip of your finger, your fingernail cut off.
Right.
And you can't find it.
And even better, this just involves like dumping a magic powder on that wound.
Yeah.
So if you have your finger cut off below the nail, right below the nail, which happened to a guy in Cincinnati in 2005 who owned a hobby shop.
Yeah.
I used to love those places.
Oh, me too.
Man, I'd go in and be like, I just want all the model airplanes and everything.
Yeah, Eddie's Trick Shop in Atlanta was my go-to.
Oh, nice.
Which I've just discovered still exists not too far from my house.
Is it a magic shop?
It's like everything.
Yeah?
Like they had models, they had magic kits, they had, whoopee cushions. Uh-huh. It was sort of like a catch-all.
Yeah, I liked both of those, but I never went to one that was the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this guy, this hobby shop owner,
yeah,
as far as we know, he sold no magic items.
Okay.
He was demonstrating why a motor was very dangerous in an RC plane.
He did a good job, I guess.
And cut his finger off. And apparently his brother had something to do with tissue regeneration and said,
yeah, he was in the biz.
Yeah. The guy went to the doctor, the hospital, and the doctor's like, we'll give you a skin graft to just kind of cover this weirdness. But, you lost your finger, TS.
Yeah.
And, the guy's brother was like, don't get the skin graft just yet. Come over. I'll give you a beer and, I'm going to put something that's called extracellular matrix on your wound. And let's see what happens. And they did.
Yeah.
And magic happened.
Then it regrew.
The guy not only regrew his finger, he regrew apparently not the bone, but very surprisingly, the nail bed and fingernail,
yeah,
which apparently like you don't grow a nail bed back. Like even if you cut off just the tip of your finger, like that nail bed's never growing back. This guy's nail bed grew back.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Extracellular matrix is awesome. That's basically like the glue that holds our cells together.
Mm-hmm.
And not just us, plants and animals and trees,
right,
and they all have it. And it functions outside the body cells. That's why it's called extracellular, obviously.
Right.
And it's collagen. We've talked a lot about collagen, the protein that's, super good for all kinds of things.
Especially growing skin.
Yeah, or like, it's in skin cream and stuff like that.
Sure.
So typically what they use is, this was a powder from pig bladder, but, I saw a video on the New York Times site that showed how they do it today. And this is mainly for, let's say you didn't want a skin graft,
mm-hmm,
for some reason, or it wasn't possible to get a skin graft and you've lost all the skin on your thigh. They would get a pig bladder and they spread it out and they remove all the cells basically. And
yeah, because this stuff doesn't have pig cells.
No, it doesn't have
this
pig cells.
This is harvested from a pig body.
Yeah. But they still remove the cells and all the DNA with like a chemical bath. And basically what's remaining is the matrix. And they end up drying it out and it looks like and cut it into sheets. And it looks like a sheet of like parchment paper.
Huh.
And then they will put that on your leg and it immediately just starts going to work.
Yeah. They used to think that extracellular matrix was just something that provided structure for cells to grow around.
Yeah. Like a fetal in the fetus.
Yeah. Because if you're in the fetus and like something happens, you lose a toe.
In the fetus.
If you are a fetus.
Yeah.
If you're in the fetal position.
Yeah.
In the womb.
Yes.
And you lose a toe, that toe's growing back.
Yeah.
You grow a vestigial tail, that goes away. your feet and hands start out being webbed, so you're growing a lot of stuff and then getting rid of it.
Yeah.
But you can also regrow stuff that you're not supposed to lose.
Yeah, up to the age of about two.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the general idea is that the extracellular matrix just kind of goes dormant in humans.
Right. But they thought that it was just structure. And then they realized that, no, this is actually creating some sort of signal to the rest of the body to say, hey, don't scar, regrow instead. And it goes and recruits stem cells and says, come over here and let's rebuild this finger.
Yeah.
This hobby shop accident was too ironic. Let's reward this man with a regrown finger. And don't forget the nail bed. That's what extracellular matrix says to everything else.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. The problem with why you can't normally just regrow a finger is because when something like that happens, a trauma happens, your body says it recognizes it, and mm-hmm. the immune system kicks in,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to swell up and get inflamed, and scar tissue is going to start to form.
Right.
And the extracellular matrix prevents the inflammation, prevents scar tissue from forming, and basically tells the body, like, no, I'm just going to grow like normally.
Right.
Not scar tissue, just regular old cells.
But like you said, after a certain age, it just goes away. Like, we have the extracellular matrix still, but its function or its ability to trigger regrowth becomes dormant, or something happens to it. And with this pig bladder stuff, they're starting to wonder, is there a way that we can just trigger this naturally in
yeah.
the body? And if that's the case, then say hello to regrowing a whole head.
I mean, you never know. Because they pointed out that, like, deer can regrow antlers
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And they're so different than us cellularly.
Right. Because it has bone cartilage.
Yeah.
Skin.
Sure.
All those things are in your hand, your arm, your leg. And you would need to regrow all those for something to really be considered regrown.
Sure.
You can't just regrow the leg, but not the bone. It'd still be impressive, but your leg is kind of flopping there. Have you ever seen the picture of that UFC fighter who's like kicking the guy?
Oh.
And he breaks his own leg, and it's just like almost like a cartoon.
Yeah.
Or McGahee.
Oh, yeah. Willis McGahee.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff triggers the old mirror neurons
yeah.
big time for
Makes me weak.
So that's basically it. I mean, they've been experimenting with war veterans, Iraqi war veterans, and actually the New York Times video I saw, though, it was a war veteran who mm-hmm. was having this done to his thigh.
Yeah, his
it's a great success.
Tendons, right?
I think it was skin and tendons, and yeah. And it was, you know, it looked kind of gnarly, but it was functioning.
Yeah. And that counts.
You got anything else?
No, I think that's it. There's literally nothing else to say about this.
I agree, sir.
All right. Well, then, if you want to learn more about replantation, you can type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and it'll bring up a couple cool things. At the very least, also, type in extracellular matrix, which is pretty cool sounding, and that'll bring up another article, too. And since I said those things, it's time for listener mail.
That's right. I'm going to call this correction. We get these from time to time. And we like to read them.
Yeah.
From time to time. Hey, guys and Jerry, love the work you do. I love listening to the show. I wanted to write in, though, with a correction regarding Lewis and Clark. I'm working towards my PhD in art history, and I am particularly interested in the history of medicine and disease. In the middle of the show, Josh mentioned that the Adventure Party inadvertently discovered syphilis. It had not been known to Europeans up until that point. This is actually not quite the case. Syphilis goes back pretty far in European history. It was first documented in the late 15th century after a conflict between France and Italy, and remained an issue for Europe, peaking around the mid-19th century.
Right.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, you said it.
Okay. Josh did have part of it right, though, when he said that the party blamed it on Native American groups. Early on, everyone wanted to blame the disease on everyone else. No surprises here. But after that initial conflict, the French referred to syphilis as the Neapolitan sickness, while the Italians named it the French sickness, a trend that continued as the stuff spread. If you're interested, it's really fascinating stuff, especially the cures that became popular. Mercury was a really nasty one. History of Syphilis by Claude Cattell is a pretty good reference. She read a book called The History of Syphilis. Somebody wrote a book called The History of Syphilis.
Right.
Anyway, just wanted, and that was Claude, Q-U-E, accent aigu, T-E-L. So he's French.
That was nice.
Isn't that what that's called?
I don't remember anymore.
I don't either. Anyway, just wanted to point that out.
Garçon.
Yeah. That is from Catherine. I'm sorry, Kathleen Pierce.
Nice. Well, thanks
a
lot.
She's into disease.
Thanks for and paintings about disease.
I guess so.
Thanks a lot for letting us know that, Kathleen. I feel like I've been set straight. If you want to set us straight, we like to be corrected. Right?
Yeah.
Man.
Nothing better.
All you have to do is tweet to us.
Sure.
To initiate contact. You can tweet to us using our handle, SYSK Podcast. You can go on to Facebook. That's another great way to contact us.
Yeah, you can complain there.
Mm-hmm. People love doing that. we're at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. You can send us an email to stuffpodcast@discovery.com. And although you can't complain, you can enjoy our website, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
With over 100,000 titles to choose from, Audible.com is a leading provider of downloadable digital audiobooks and spoken word entertainment. Go to audiblepodcast.com/knowstuff, K-N-O-W-S-T-U-F-F, to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today.
Hey, everybody. If you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions. Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater.